It has been just over a year since we last met inside the church in person for worship. The board up there, the hymn board here at St. Luke, still says to Lent. Our very first live stream service was the third Sunday in Lent from our first regular church service. For many of us, life changed dramatically last March. For many of us, it has been a year marked by absences, by lack, no socializing with family and friends, no outings, no being in public in any ordinary way, only those quick dashes to the grocery store, maybe even to have groceries loaded into the trunk of your car instead of to go down the aisles. No going to our favorite places. No going to the gym. No seeing people's faces, unobscured by masks. No hugs. No handshakes or gentle touches on the shoulder. We've lived life virtually, at a distance from everyone except the people in our households. And many people in our community and throughout our nation and throughout the world have suffered economic hardship. People have lost work, lost their jobs, lost their businesses, or are still just barely struggling to get by because so little business comes in. During this past year, very little has been under our control, other maybe than how much we choose to cooperate with public health orders. And I think that it's fair to say that most of us don't like not being in control of our own lives. Of course, the idea that we are ever in control of our own lives is a bit of an illusion. But it's been borne to us how little, borne home to us how little control we have lately. We here in Lincoln County have been fortunate, comparatively speaking. We've had many fewer illnesses and deaths than in most parts of the country and of the world. For most of us here in our part of this world, this year has been a waiting game. We're looking ahead, waiting to see what's coming, trying to figure out what we need to do next. For those of you who've been vaccinated, it's like, what is it safe for me to do? Can I go and do all the things I used to? How do I behave now? And we wait week by week for the new information from the government, from public health. What next? Today's gospel reading shows us Jesus looking ahead to see what's coming next. And what he sees coming at him is death, shame, pain, rejection, and death. And he struggles with himself about how he's going to respond. We have Jesus' own words here saying, "My soul is troubled. I'm torn up inside. I'm struggling. What should I say? I have an internal debate going on. Should I say, 'Father, save me from this hour?' Because who wants to just willingly go to their death? This does not look like a good time ahead of me." And we see here Jesus in his humanity acknowledging that he'd really like to be saved from this hour. He doesn't want to have to face it. He doesn't want to die. And yet he recognizes that his death is necessary, that this pathway that he is walking, this path that leads to suffering, that leads to rejection, that leads to his being lifted up on the cross, that this is the reason that he is called as Messiah, that this path will bear much fruit for others. And so Jesus recognizes that his suffering is other-focused. That's the way he chooses to live it. Unless a grain of wheat falls into the earth and dies, it remains just a single grain. He looks beyond his own good, beyond the good of the individual, to what is good for the whole community. And he recognizes that his own suffering will be fruitful for others. Jesus obviously is not looking for suffering. He's not saying, pile on suffering, this is how I get my joy. He's saying, no, this is what I have to bear because it is a consequence of the path that I've been called to follow. I'm following the path that God has laid before me. The call that God has put on my life. And this is where my call leads me, because this is how people respond to my message. The religious leaders in particular do not want to hear what I have to say. My preaching and my teaching provokes them. They respond with anger and hate and ultimately with violence, because when all else fails, that's what they know to do. And so I can see where all this is headed. Should I step back? Should I be quiet? Should I stop teaching in order to avoid this? No. I have to remain faithful to the message I've been given. And to remain faithful to that message means they're going to kill me. In all of this, in Jesus' choice to say, not save me from this hour, but glorify your name, Jesus surrenders control over his life and over what will happen to him. He surrenders control to God. Our lesson today from Hebrews has long struck me as one of the most stunning lessons in the New Testament, if you just look closely at it. Did you notice that it says that Jesus learned obedience through what he suffered and that he was made perfect? That shows us so strikingly Jesus as a truly human being who had to learn like any of us do, who had to be made perfect. Hebrews portrays Jesus' suffering as an opportunity for growth. It's through his suffering that he learned, that he grew in understanding. It was through his obedience to God. And we see here obedience as trust. Jesus didn't obey God because Jesus was afraid of God, afraid of punishment, living in fear. Jesus' obedience to God was based on trust in God's goodness and God's love, that God would bring good out of the path that Jesus was walking. It was a confidence that God can bring good even out of our deepest pain. In Jesus' teaching today, and in Hebrews both, we hear a call to follow Jesus wherever Jesus leads us, even if Jesus' path brings us to our own cross. And it's an invitation to learn from our suffering. Jesus challenges us to live looking outward, so that we see and respond compassionately to the suffering of others. In that way, Jesus promises, like the grain of wheat that falls into the earth and dies, we will bear much fruit. Jesus' suffering draws people into community. He says, I, when I am lifted up from the earth, will draw all people to myself. And that lifting up from the earth is, in the first place, an image of the cross. It is the moment when Jesus is glorified. That Jesus on the cross is lifted up, and then in John's vision, lifted up from there in resurrection and to the Father's presence. Both Hebrews and the Gospel of John were written to Christians who were experiencing persecution, who were undergoing all kinds of hardship and suffering. And they invite their readers to consider the meaning of suffering in their own lives. What do we learn by looking at Jesus' suffering? And how do we translate that into how we live? Because none of us will escape suffering. It goes with the human condition, suffering. It's not that we seek it. It's not that we want it. We're not masochists. We're not seeking persecution or hardship or pain or illness or any of those things, but they come to us as part of our human experience in the world. So what do we make of them? How do we find meaning in them? Richard Tedeschi, a psychologist and researcher, has done extensive research on a phenomenon that the New York Times refers to as the surprising flip side of post-traumatic stress. And as you know, post-traumatic stress disorder is an increasingly common condition, a struggle for people in our world. It's exceedingly common among veterans, especially those who've done active service, active duty. But it's also, any people who've had adverse childhood experiences, people who've had any kind of traumatic, world-changing event, frequently suffer from post-traumatic stress. But in Tedeschi's research, he worked with more than 600 trauma survivors and surprisingly found positive change in five areas. That these survivors of intense trauma had found, along with this, a renewed appreciation for life. They'd found new possibilities for themselves. They'd felt more personal strength. Their relationships improved. And they were more satisfied spiritually. They felt more connected and spiritually whole. He named this phenomenon post-traumatic growth. And it just resonates so much with Hebrews. Jesus learned obedience through what he suffered. Jesus learned and was perfected through this experience of suffering. According to people who've done research on this area of post-traumatic growth, it's actually more common than post-traumatic stress disorder. And it can even coexist with it. The kinds of traumas that we're talking about are described by the researchers as seismic events, events that shake you to your core. And I think that what the world has undergone in this last year has been a seismic event, an event that has shaken us all to our core. And mingled in with for us here in the United States and here in Oregon, mingled in with the pandemic, have been the Black Lives Matter protests, our country's really confrontation with racism and its implications for Black people in our nation, in their daily lives. We've had the riot at the Capitol, the attack on the Capitol, and how that's shaken us as a nation. Here in our state, we've had the fires, and throughout the West, we've had the fires that were so devastating to many. And for many of us, you know, one or more of these traumas has really touched us deeply, touched our lives, touched the lives of those we love. This kind of seismic event that shakes us to our core can prompt questioning of our fundamental assumptions about the world. In the face of the Black Lives Matter protest, many of us have been saying, how am I racist? How am I racist? Where do I see racism in my society? I'd always assumed that I wasn't, and that we'd built this sort of, you know, in many ways, yeah, we deal with some racism, but mostly post-racist society. We don't see color, right? And some of those fundamental assumptions have been shaken by the repeated deaths of Black people at the hands of the police, by the revelations that have come out, the parts of our history that we were never taught, that we've ignored. Our fundamental assumptions about the world have been shaken, that medical science just can immediately deal with a new virus, you know, or that we're safe. We're safe in public gatherings. Those kinds of assumptions have been shaken. And so it causes questioning of our reality. The researchers say that survivors of trauma inevitably confront questions about existence that most of us avoid. We've had to think about, well, what if I do get really sick? What will that mean for my family? How will I handle it? How do I deal with these financial questions that have come up? And how do I live in the meantime? The potential for growth comes not from the event itself, but from our struggle to make sense of it. And the challenge is to see the opportunities that are presented. Tedeschi uses the image of a massive earthquake and the devastation that it brings. There's an opportunity for learning there, you know? How are we going to rebuild? Don't just rebuild the same crappy building that you had before, right? Why not build something better? Why not build something that will resist the next earthquake? And so these massive events that shake us to the core become opportunities for reflection on how are we going to live differently in the future? What do we take away from this experience? Tedeschi says, the way we cope with trauma is far more complex than once thought. And the way it molds us is similarly complex. We bend, we break, we repair and rebuild, and often we grow, changing for the better in ways we never would have if we had not suffered. Changing for the better in ways we never would have if we had not suffered. Suffering makes us question who we are, how we relate to those we love, who God is for us, where God is for us in the middle of suffering. Suffering made even Jesus question those things. And so suffering becomes an opportunity to grow, and in the wake of it, to live differently, to do things differently. And so I invite you in this last Sunday before Holy Week begins, to reflect on the traumatic events in your life, whatever they may have been, and most of us have at least one. What have you learned from grief, from illness, from loss, from isolation, from the traumatic events of your childhood? What have you learned? How have those events caused you to question, to reflect, to ruminate? Where is God for you in all of that suffering? How can that suffering be turned outwards for the good of others? According to Jesus' model of the grain that bears much fruit, how does it make you more compassionate? How do you live out that compassion in the world? I think that as we begin to feel that we're turning a page on the pandemic, this is a real opportunity for us to reflect together on what we in this state and nation have learned this past year. What have we learned from our shared experience of COVID? What have we learned about the importance of community, of our family, of our friends? What have we learned from the ways that we've seen racism exposed this past year? What have we learned from the massive wildfires throughout the West and their tragic cost for human life and for the environment? What have we learned? What will we do differently? How will we change in response to what we've learned? Because the point of the suffering is not the brute experience of suffering, but what do we learn from it? How do we find God walking with us in it, trying to teach us something? What do we learn about our not being in control? Has it stripped away our illusion that we're completely in charge of our lives? And what does it mean? Do we respond to that with panic? Or do we respond to that with trust in the one who loves us? I've done some reflecting already with our BACs about what we've learned as church. And some really beautiful reflection together about how much church is not just about the prayers we say, the words we say, but about the experience of being here together, physically gathering in worship. One of our BAC members sparked a conversation about how important the preparation time for worship is, how different it is to just click the computer and be there for online worship, as opposed to getting ready on Sunday, getting dressed up, traveling, you know, even if you just dress up in jeans, but, you know, getting ready to be seen in public rather than in your jammies, right? And the drive time to church, and that there's an intentionality, a setting apart of this time as sacred. And then there's the experience of physically being with other worshipers, the shared breath, and how our understanding of breath has changed this last year. It has become something dangerous. But to be in worship with others, the common intake of breath, those moments of sacred silence. There is something irreplaceable about being physically present with our fellow believers to share in worship. I don't know that most of us realized how precious that was. This year has taught us that. And for many a reminder of how essentially important communion is. We've had a very long Lenten fast. We've learned from this year, though, some opportunities too, that we can reach people who can't physically be present with us through live stream. And we'll probably continue doing that even after we fully resume in-person worship. We've learned that the daily office, live streamed, is really important to a core group in our congregation and beyond, and that we can connect and pray for our community and our world in this way, in a way that's far more convenient than inviting people to show up at, 9 a.m. at church for an in-person service. But we've learned. And as we move toward reopening, in whatever form that takes, I'm going to be inviting you to do some more reflecting on how we as church will change in response to what we've learned this past year. How will we do things differently to deepen our obedience to God? And I hope that that can be a conversation that we all have together, even as you reflect on the meaning of suffering in your personal lives, that we'll reflect together as community on our experience of corporate loss, corporate suffering in this time of Lenten fast, and how we'll learn from it, how we'll change, so that we can become more obedient, closer to the perfection that God has in mind for us, and that in all of it, we can pray with Jesus, "Father, glorify your name." Amen.